What really gets my dick hard is...
What?
Hey everyone, this is Tom Cui here from Alpha Metallica, and you're listening to Metal Up Your Podcast.
Welcome to Metal Up Your Podcast. I'm Ethan Luck.
And I'm Clint Wells.
And we're at episode number 65. And this week we're starting what we kind of started earlier, a year in the life of Metallica. And this week we're going to have to cram 2 years in because 1981, not much happened.
Not a lot happened.
Two significant moments. But yeah, the general idea of this series is to highlight 1 year in each, you know, in the life of Metallica chronologically.
So go through it in excruciating detail.
Excruciating.
And on Monday of October,
at 4:57 p.m.,
James Hetfield had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. He called it a PB and jelly.
He did, and he cuts the crust off.
This is, isn't it weird? Like the last several weeks, it's been us with a guest. This is the first time it's just been mano a mano.
I know, it's weird. I feel uncomfortable.
What does mano y mano mean?
One-on-one.
Okay, yeah, I used it correctly. Mikasa y mano.
Not stereo y not stereo. Yeah, it is weird. I actually, I think yesterday, when I was making sure that our episode with Matt Thomas showed up on iTunes, I was like, oh, that's three guests in a row.
Yeah.
Because normally we kind of spread them out. It's like maybe once a month or something.
Getting a little crowded in here.
Getting a little crowded. So we got, you know, we had to kick everyone out of all the HQs and just back to me and Clint.
Yeah. Our friend Benjamin on Twitter made a joke today about, he's like, HQ5 is the yacht.
I can't wait for that one.
In the Canary Islands.
It's going to be amazing.
Where I might ask another billionaire to just give me $1 million.
Yeah. And then we could buy our own yacht.
Yeah.
And that'll be HQ5. I can't wait to see how many HQs.
We have small dreams here. Very humble dreams.
They're very humble. I'm just excited to see at the end of like year two, how many HQs we're at.
Let me ask you this. So there's this new Metallica news that the boys are going to be getting involved in the whiskey business. Did you see that?
I heard, yeah. I haven't dove into that and researched it, but I've heard.
Yeah, interesting.
I'd imagine James won't be sampling any.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Someone was saying on one of the forums or whatever, like, you know, they should really all taste it because you don't need to put your name on something. It's like, no, they don't. Do you understand how business ventures work?
Exactly.
James Hetfield's like, oh, we're going to make money doing that? Let's put money there.
But you know what? Put Metallica's name on it. We'll make money. Go, okay, go ahead. Well, they did that with Budweiser.
Yeah.
And, it was like Canada
only. It was
only.
Canadian, yeah.
Yeah, it was like Metallica Budweiser. I would love
it. Didn't look that
to
cool.
It didn't look that cool, but it'd be cool to have a can or something.
Can't compete with the Iron Maiden shit.
Yeah, true. The Trooper beer is quite good.
It's awesome.
I haven't tried the Megadeth beer yet. Only because a damn four pack is like $13.
Hello, bank account.
Hello, Cerveza.
What if the Megadeth beer was just collections of Dave's tears?
Every time he's complained, every time he's complained about Metallica, he cries a little bit, and they bottle it. No, they have it at the liquor store I go to here in town.
Do they really?
Yeah. It's
we should get some.
I'd be down. I really want to try, but every time I go there, I'm like, gosh. I can get this gigantic bottle of Skull Vodka for $11.
Yeah, they're going to pay us $11 to drink the vodka we drink.
or four beers for $13. So
wow.
I'll get it eventually.
Yeah.
The Iron Maiden beer is quite good. I've had that numerous times.
Yep, I had several of them at the Iron Maiden show last year.
Hmm. Is this an Iron Maiden podcast now?
Probably.
Okay, cool. So this week we're talking about the Trooper and
Power, they were doing Power Slave. All right, let's just get through this stuff. We do a Patreon. You're going to hear about that a little later. We wanted to honor. We got a new patron this week. His name is Shantive, and you can say the last name.
I'm going to attempt this one. I'm going to go ahead and say it's Jahangiani.
Jahangiani.
I mean, phonetically, it'd be Jahangiani, but I'm going to say Jahangiani.
He's either Japanese or Italian,
or from Mississippi.
Where Paul's from.
Where's Paul's from? Well, Shantiv, thank you so much for being a patron. We're very grateful. We can't thank everyone enough for getting involved in that.
If you don't know who we are, by the way, if maybe you're just joining us for the first time, we're an All Metallica podcast. My friend Ethan Luck and I are two professional touring, very successful musicians.
If you had any idea what we were talking about before,
maybe you've seen
recorded
E! Entertainment News. Maybe you've seen
a lot of TMZ articles on us.
Just totes. Just
oh yeah,
paparazzi following. I'm banging umbrellas against cars, shaving my head.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, yeah. I mean, there's usually we're at HQ1 tonight, and there's usually someone waiting out by Clint's car in front of my house when he leaves.
Right. So every week, despite how much we're just hassled by the paparazzi, we get together, we talk about Metallica, we cover everything from the band members to the albums to their gear. Like you're going to hear today, we're just going to go through a couple of years in their life, the formation of our beloved Metallica yeah. from 1981 through 1982. And come follow us on all the socials, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. We have a lot of fun over there with everyone who listens. Best way to get a hold of us, however, is our email address, which is metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com. Let's listen to some emails.
Let's do it. All right. Our first email is from Davin Meg. Hey, guys. I was wondering if you guys like or are familiar with Seven Dust. If you've never checked anything out, give Clint Lowry a listen, especially the song Hell's Next Door. I was just curious. Keep up the good work. Love the show. I've never gotten into Seven Dust.
Me neither. I've been aware of that guy because
sure.
Anyone on the planet named Clint, we like to band together.
Yeah.
We form an intramural volleyball team.
Yep, yep.
Top Gun style.
It only has to be Top Gun style. What do you think me and Ethan Hawke do all day?
I don't know. Slap each other's butts on the sand.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I guess I'll check out that song, but I also never really got into Seven Dust.
That kind of falls in that era of... I don't know if you would call them new metal, but just kind of that, I don't know. I just never, a lot of those bands I just never got into. If I heard a song or two, saw it on TV or something, it was always kind of like, yeah, okay.
What's the song called?
Hell's Next Door. Are you looking it up right now?
Well, why not? Let's just fucking go for it.
Clint's like a producer right now of the show.
Oh, that's not it. That's not it. This is a band called Hello Demons Meet Skeletons.
I'm sorry. Say it again.
Hello Demons Meet Skeletons. That is definitely not it.
Well, Hello Demons, not Skeletons. You're welcome. You just got a shout out on Metal Up Your Podcast, the biggest podcast in the world.
What's this? I'm not finding it. Hell's Next Door?
Did you type in Seven Dust?
Is it Clint Lowry solo?
Maybe. So if you've never checked out anything, give Clint Lowry a listen, especially the song Hell's Next Door.
Clint and Corey Lowry. This is them doing an acoustic version.
Okay.
Oh, God. Are we willing to check this out? Why not? It's our show.
It's our show. We can
do whatever
we
fuck we want.
Yeah, I don't care.
Here we go. This is an acoustic version.
Don't love the guitar tone yet. Got a good voice.
I'm Clint Lowry. Cool low harmony.
Oh, a dude's playing a cajon. That's my least favorite percussion instrument of all time. Because you know what it looks like he's doing? Masturbating.
He might be masturbating, actually. I wouldn't begrudge him of that.
Yeah.
Man, I kind of like it.
Kind of like it, too.
Good harmonies.
Good harmonies. That guitar kind of sucks. It's a ugly guitar. But I'm not judging the song off that. I kind of back it. That's
yeah,
good. Yeah.
I really like it, actually. Wow.
Well, Dav and Meg, we just became fans of at least an acoustic Seven Dust song.
Well, very cool. Thanks for the suggestion.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. Our next email is from our brand new patron. You know what? Let's give it up for Shantiv.
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 Shantivy lady.
We'll see what Shantiv has to say. He says, hey, Clint and Ethan, new patron here. Been on the ride since episode one and enjoying it immensely. It's really interesting to hear my favorite band's albums dissected by people who've dedicated their lives to music. To the music industry, rather, and have a unique insight. Keep up the great work. Since I'm a huge metal fan in general, not just Metallica, I really enjoyed your discussion with Tom. He's talking about our good friend Tom Kui.
Yeah.
About your favorite non-Metallica metal albums a few weeks ago, I wanted to throw in my own personal list. Maybe you've heard some of these, or if not, maybe you'll find some new cool shit. I have not heard of several of these. Number 10, he says Bathory, a record called Blood, Fire, Death.
Mm.
Iron Maiden, Power Slave, of course. Slayer, Hell Awaits, wonderful. Bolt Thrower, Realm of Chaos.
Bolt Thrower's cool.
You know that?
And yeah.
Mega Crap, Rust in Peace.
Who's Mega Crap?
Judas Priest, Stained Glass, Death, Human, King Diamond, Abigail, Coroner, Mental Vortex, and Sepultura, Beneath the Remains. I definitely know that one.
Yeah.
Big Sepultura fan. All right. He says, on a somewhat related note, I was wondering what your guys' opinion on separating the artist from the art are. Some metal musicians in particular have questionable views at best. I'm able to separate that from their music, but I've gotten into a couple of debates with friends who can't. Anyways, thank you guys for the podcast and keep it up. P.S., the award for most badass album title I've ever heard goes to Abigor's Channeling the Quintessence of Satan.
Wow.
Maybe some inspiration for Lunar Satan's next track. I do have to say, I think the most badass record title is How Like a Wolf and a Witch Will Open the Door, which is the title of the debut Lunar Satan track, although I did lift it from Merciful Fate.
That's okay.
That was a total throwaway lyric for them. I'm like, shit, that's like going to be my crowning achievement.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, okay, let's get into this. So separating an artist who has questionable views. I don't know much about questionable views within metal, but I do know we've had a really strange year with dealing with people like Louis C.K.
Right.
Doing some disgusting shit.
And now, are we talking about that or like questionable views? Just are we maybe speaking politically or I guess it can be an general?
I would say, and this answer I guess is infuriating because it's a complicated question, is it really depends on what the views are.
Right, yeah.
If a metal band holds the views that, you know, that pedophilia is a neat thing, they're out for me. I can't listen to their
Agreed,
music.
Yeah.
That's out. Now, if they disagree with me politically, let's say we found out that a metal hero of ours, for whatever reason, was, let's just say they're a big Trump supporter.
Just say it.
I don't think that would color for me liking their records unless their records dealt explicitly with that information.
Yeah, or if they, you know, sang about something politically and they were supporters of something I wasn't a supporter of.
Well, I mean, you know,
I think once it crosses the line of like, okay,
everyone's got a line.
Sure. If we just disagree politically, that's fine. But once the line is crossed where it's like, okay, you know what? I agree with the alt-right and these neo-Nazis because I support this candidate or because I'm a Republican or because I'm this and that, then it's kind of like, okay, you know what? You're crossing into like hatred
and
things
like that.
At some
point, it does get complicated. Like
yeah.
Dimebag Darrell having the Confederate flag, okay? Anyone who knows me personally knows that I absolutely abhor racism. Especially being from the South and growing up around it, I can't stand it. Now, Dimebag having that on his guitar, it doesn't offend me the same way as someone using some colorful language around me, like people
sure.
have done in my family even. So I'm not going to stop listening to Pantera. Bill Cosby, however, I can no longer enjoy Bill Cosby after
that kind of stuff, that's
40 years of systematic rape. That's
right.
Out. Now, I like Roman Polanski's movies. I watched Rosemary's Baby again recently, and I loved it. And that dude's done some terrible shit, too.
Yeah.
So it's really tough, man. I don't know.
I mean, you know, on one end you say, okay, you know, people can say, well, you know, obviously everyone's flawed. No one's perfect. At the same time, this is like conscious decision making in doing these things to other people, to hurt other people, to whatever. And at that point, it gets, you know, you get down the line where it's like, okay, like, I disagree with this. And not only that, but it's fucking wrong.
Right.
You can't do that to people. You can't
right.
say that to people. And, you know, like if, you know, I hate to say it, but if we found out all of a sudden, like, this all, you know, happened with James Hetfield.
Right.
Like, there's a good chance I wouldn't listen to Metallica again.
Yeah.
If the same thing happened to Bill Cosby, happened to James Hetfield or Lars or Kirk.
Oh, absolutely.
Or whoever, it would be, okay, well, I don't support that at all.
I've kind of felt like during this Me Too stuff, which... You know, let me just say as a blanket statement, I think the Me Too movement is fucking awesome, and it's about goddamn time, and guys like Harvey Weinstein need to fucking go away. But there, it has sort of the fervor around it's turned a bit into a witch hunt type vibe, the
sure.
shit that happened with Aziz and Zari. And I've worried about like, oh no, which one of my heroes is going to go down today?
Right, yeah.
Oh no.
Because the list is really long.
But you know, there's things that, you know, James is a big hunter. I'm not super into that. I'm not super against it either. He's a pretty religious cat, and he did a voiceover for like an anti-porn documentary.
Right.
I'm pro-porn. So none of those things are going to keep me from enjoying Sabbath True. But it's like we're saying, there is a line, though, and like I guess we don't really know what it is till it happens, and everyone's got to decide for themselves.
Yeah, very true.
It'd be real weird to prescribe to our listeners or to anybody what to do about it all. You got to take responsibility and make a personal decision.
And it's a tough world we live in now where I feel like people are so quick to not want to coexist with somebody else based off of one little thing. It's like you and I differ on plenty of things.
Sure.
You know, I consider myself a Christian. You're an atheist.
Right.
But here we are.
No problem.
14 months into a podcast.
No problem.
You know, if all of a sudden you walked to my door and you were like, hey, I think raping babies is cool, I'd be like, get the fuck out of my house, you know? Like,
yeah, I think the whole country's mellowed out on the whole religious thing. Like, the idea of me being an atheist or you being a Christian doesn't even occur to me to be a problem for you or I.
Sure, yeah.
And I have many friends the same way. Like, I don't want to out anybody or whatever, but, you know, I have many atheists and religious friends. We're all real fine on that.
Yeah. Well, I think the problem nowadays is that, you know, or the focus nowadays isn't religion anymore. It's just, it's political party. It's insane how much that affects people
Totally.
Relationships.
And there's been a real strong push towards identity politics, to where your particular stance on a political issue kind of becomes your personal identity. And what that does is, I believe it's used by the powers that be as a tool of confusion and division, where it makes everything real tribal. It's us versus them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And it breaks down the ability to have a conversation with someone. So what Ethan and I do for a living, which is travel, traveling, Mark Twain had a great quote about how traveling is kind of the antidote and the medicine of bigotry, because you get out from behind your fucking click-clack computer screen and you meet real people who disagree with you. And at the end of the day, you can have a beer, or you can agree to disagree.
Exactly.
That's what most conflicts like in the real world. But this new sort of digital trolling framework we have going on, where everyone's just so fucking charged up and mean, and real quick to write someone off entirely because they got scared and wanted and were scared of Hillary, so they voted for Trump.
It's
all very nuanced.
Yeah.
It's a great question, though, for the podcast.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, there's...
Should we put that out to the listeners, maybe, to see what they think about that?
Yeah, like, I mean, yeah, shoot us an email at metalpodcastshow@gmail.com. Tell us what you think. I mean, you made a good point where it's like, you don't really know what the line is until it's crossed.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, I remember even, like, when I think it was my mom, maybe, started getting, like, really, really conservative. And at one point, it was like, Bruce Springsteen, you know, was doing something where he was, you know, promoting whatever the Democratic nominee was.
Right, he goes and plays the Democratic convention.
Yeah,
and
my mom was just like, I just wish he would just play music and not talk about his politics and stuff like that. It's like, well...
Let's camp out there for a second, because as a Pearl Jam fan, and you're the same way, like, to be a Pearl Jam fan means to sort of have to apologize for a character like Eddie Vedder, who is very politically outspoken, famously put the George Bush mask and impaled it on a mic stand and all this. The whole idea of, like, artists just need to shut up and play music.
Right.
Dude, artists are the only ones trying to tell you the fucking truth.
Yeah.
You think your fucking politicians are trying to tell you the truth?
Exactly.
Get the fuck out of here.
Get away.
What artists are doing, and they may be wrong, but what good artists do is they look at the world around them and they report back what they believe to be the truth to their fans, to the people.
Yeah.
And
they're traveling.
And they do a lot. They see a lot of shit.
They see a lot more than a lot of us do.
They see a lot of people. A lot of, like, normal people.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know that a lot of them are rich and live in strange bubbles, but they're also like, it just depends on the band and stuff. But I'm glad artists try to tell the truth.
Well, and guess what? It's their decision to do that or not. And an artist like Bruce Springsteen, I mean, he's been pretty political for most of his career. It's not all of a sudden it's a new thing. Now it's a problem for somebody because you disagree with it.
Well, and look at what is most of his music about? It's about the people that Trump claims to want to help the most.
It's about being born in the USA, man.
It's, even though Born in the USA is an anti-Vietnam song, but Bruce Springsteen writes songs about, you know, your average Joe, man.
Mm-hmm.
Blue collar. You know? So, it's strange. I get it. If you don't want to listen to it, you got to get off the ride for a minute. You're too charged up.
Yeah.
You can't see Bruce Springsteen go play at the Hillary Clinton thing. I get it. That doesn't mean you have to put Born to Run away.
Yeah, because that's a great record.
That doesn't mean 10th Avenue Freeze-Out's not badass anymore.
Right. Yeah, I mean, to each their own. It's your choice to listen to whatever music you want to, and it's the artist's choice to sing and talk about whatever they want to.
Yeah,
they've worked their ass off and gotten to the point in their career, where they've created a bigger and bigger and bigger platform to speak from.
Yeah,
and it's not, you know, none of us ever get into music to just, well, I'm just gonna put my head down and play music and shut up. You know, it's like, I've written political songs lately. Yeah, you know, it's just similar. Something that's in you. It's part of art, you know.
Well, and you know, I love No Life Till Leather. We're going to kick some ass tonight. I love that, but I also love that James wrote Injustice for All.
Yeah.
You know, I'm glad that he wrote Don't Tread on Me, and I'm glad he writes about war. I'm glad he wrote Disposable Heroes. I'm glad he wrote Confusion. And it's complicated because James doesn't strike me as an anti-military guy, but he's real willing to write about the negative effects of war.
Yeah.
PTSD and how these people who go to war are seen as disposable. And
well, and agree with it or not, it's real stuff.
And you know what it is? It's like, put on your fucking big boy and girl pants and deal with it. It's art. It's just an artist singing a 3-minute, or in Metallica's case, a 10-minute song.
I want to put on some big girl pants.
I would have to take off the big girl pants I'm already wearing and put on different ones. I always wear big girl pants. Is that weird?
They're comfortable.
They feel good.
Oh, yeah. Satin? Feel great.
Silk sometimes?
Satin, I prefer.
Okay, let's move on.
Let's go on to our third email from Danny Derryberry.
Hello, Danny. Well, if you want me to play it, Danny, I'll play it. If you don't want me to, I'll go home, Ethan.
Pass the paparazzi. Just finished the Wayne's.
I was trying to get into my car. The paparazzi was all around me, but if you want me to go home, paparazzi, you have to get out of the way of the limo.
Oh, jeez. All right, Danny says, just finished the Wayne Summers episode. Is it me, or is that a pretty rad name for a superhero's secret identity?
Dude, Wayne Summers is not a secret superhero. He is an out-and-out known hero.
Oh, yeah, it is. But no, I see what he's saying, though.
Yeah, Summers.
By day, Wayne Summers is a businessman that runs a small little convenience
by
store.
By night, he's Wayne Summers, who returns backdrops to metal bands.
Yeah, exactly. And what an impressive story this guy has. Clearly a legit good guy. We agree. Mm-hmm. I concocted a scenario in my head where I would be able to give a guitar I've been working on to Pophead himself. Seeing as how it's a modge podge of some of his flavors from different guitars. In reality, I know these guys receive several gifts from fans and would be pleased as punch if I could send it to HQ, honestly.
I don't know if you saw the email. But
I did.
Okay,
yeah.
So it's like it looks really cool, Danny. It's a Explorer-shaped guitar, which the Explorer is kind of James's classic, the eat-fuck guitar. That's the shape of an Explorer. Mm-hmm. But it's black, it's got an iron cross on it, and then he's got the cobwebs and the horns.
He's got the cobwebs, and also I noticed like some of the finish is gone. He's trying to do that one, what's the guitar called? I always forget.
The Kenneth Lawrence.
Yeah, there's some of that flavor in there, a little hint of that.
It's cool. I mean, I hope he gets to deliver it to him someday.
Oh, yeah.
It's very cool. Awesome. Always good to hear from Danny. Thanks, Danny. Andrew Belly. Belly writes.
Andrew Belly.
That sounds better than Belly. He says, hey, Ethan and Clint, I've recently come across your podcast, been smashing it. Well, don't do that.
Oh, just listen. So that means he doesn't like it. All right, next email.
I've been smashing my iPod ever since. No, he says, I've been smashing it every opportunity I get. I'm 42 years old, and Metallica have been in my life since I was 13. I was first introduced to the boys in 1988 by a cousin when he played me Battery. That feeling I had when I first heard Battery was so pure that it seems like yesterday, and it was 30 years ago. I thought that was a really interesting image.
Yeah, that's awesome.
He says, life's never been the same since. He says, I've played in bands for years, and listening to you guys has been awesome, as it reminds me very much of my playing days. It's so refreshing to hear two knowledgeable guys who know all the ins and outs of being a touring musician and everything that comes with it. I'm also constantly laughing at picturing Torben on his flying carpet and hearing Dave say, hello, podcast. Brilliant. I'm working through all the episodes and love the way you all pull apart whatever topic you're covering with absolute precision. Absolute precision, Outlaw Torn. Your honesty and empathy towards your listeners is also something that I really do respect. That's cool, man.
Wow.
There are so many things that you guys have discussed that I'd like to bring up, but honestly, I wouldn't even know where to start, as there are just so many. So I'll just keep it simple and say keep up the great work. What you guys are doing really is the bomb. Andrew Belly from Melbourne, Australia.
Right. It's a bloke from Brizzy.
Hello, you dingo.
G'day, you wallaby. I love Melbourne.
Melbourne.
Hungry Jack's. It's a great place.
Oh, totally.
You know that's what they call Burger King down there?
I've never been over there.
Hungry Jack's. Because there was already a Burger King down there before Burger King wanted to invade.
Well, if you want to call it Burger King, we can't, because they already have one called Hungry Jack's if you want me to, Paul.
There's also a great place in Australia called Lord of the Fries.
Wow.
It's delicious.
You have to throw the one true onion ring into the flaming ketchup volcano.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, Andrew, thanks for the email, man. That's pretty awesome.
Oh, you know what? I was just doing Lord of the Rings, but your Lord of the Fries would be the William Golding Lord of the Flies.
Lord of the Flies,
in which the boy with the conch shell ruled over the island.
Yes. I had some conch when I was in the Bahamas last fall.
I have some conch in my pants right now. You set me up for it. I couldn't not do it.
By the way, our friend Jack O'Shea is blowing up my phone right now.
My phone's blowing up too, but it's not Jack.
We're technically on tour right now. We played a show in Chattanooga last night. We're going to Lexington tomorrow, so he's just texting me all sorts of stuff.
For those of you in, you're doing Lexington, Chicago.
Well, the run of shows will be over by the time this episode comes out.
I don't know how time works.
So to all of you who came to the shows, all 1,000 of you, thank you so much. We had a blast. Thanks for buying all of my merch and making me even more of a millionaire than I already am. I really appreciate it. all right, our next email is from dheim620. Hey guys, you've been entertaining as always. I really enjoyed Wayne's story. I honestly can't imagine someone keeping that backdrop for themselves unless they didn't know it was lost or stolen. But then again, this world is full of dicks.
True, very true.
Very true.
Two of them in this room.
I almost said that. I'm sure Cliff was smiling down on Wayne when he gave it back.
Well, one and a half in this room.
One and a half, that's true. Let's be honest, there's just 0.5. I'm sure Cliff was smiling down on Wayne when he gave it back. Who knows how many items are out there Metallica lost and are just another item in someone's collection. Kind of fun to think about. I agree, Cliff probably was smiling down.
Yeah, that was sweet. That's a sweet image.
Anyways, guys, I've never been so happy in my life. My mom and girlfriend bought Metallica tickets on presale. So two of my closest friends, my girlfriend and I, are seeing them for the very first time ever. Very cool. I feel like I won the lottery, but it probably feels better than just winning a bunch of money. LOL.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing the Buffalo show. First time they've been there in 9 years. Since the show you were going to go can't be done, are you guys going to do something entirely different? And are you guys going to do a show for yourselves and not another Detroit type thing? Anyways, keep up the great work, guys. Well, thank you.
So, D-Hams. I think what we're here's what I would like to do. Ethan and I haven't actually formally talked about this, but what I would like to do for the 3 to 5 shows we're planning on attending is I'd like for us to have host a party the night before, and with no recording, just loose,
just to hanging
out with fans, celebrating Metallica, obviously having some libations. What I'd like to do for the show, though, is the next day do a tailgate episode similar to the Detroit show.
Right.
Where we just sort of, hopefully we can find a venue near the venue where Metallica's playing and do what we did in Detroit, where we have people come by, we'll give out some goodies, and then we wrap that up and we go straight to the show.
Yeah. I would love to do that again.
Because the pressure to, you know, what I found, it wasn't that difficult, but a challenge at the party we had was juggling wanting to hang out with everybody and then also having to like go up and do a show.
Right. Yeah, I mean, at least for Nashville, you know, we'll probably still get on stage and welcome everybody and get people psyched about the Metallica show, but it'll be 99% just hanging out, having drinks, hanging out with other Metallica fans, people we know, people, new friends, whatever.
We talked about like maybe trying to do some karaoke, we could still do a contest, but the idea of trying to put it all into an episode, I think we should just let the moment be the moment.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, what do you think about that? I mean, I think that's the best way
to do it. I think it's a good idea.
Okay. Thanks, Dylan.
You heard it here first, folks.
Joel Duggar. Oh, this was an interesting email for me. He says, "Hey, boys, I'm Joel, Nathan Duggar's brother." Now, I'll just do this really quickly. Nathan Duggar is a guitar player in town. One of the best guitar players in town. He's a good friend of mine. His main gig is for another really good friend of mine named Drew Holcomb.
Okay. Yeah.
And whenever Nathan can't do that gig, I sub for him. I play with Drew. I've known them both 15 years.
Wow.
I ran into Nathan, as happens in Nashville a lot, at the airport. We were both, I think, on the same flight.
Both carrying gig bags.
Both carrying guitars, looking like a couple of jackasses at old baggage claim. Anyway, and I never knew that Nathan was a big Metallica fan, and he talked about how he found our podcast. And
oh, cool.
He was just starting from the beginning and loving it. And he's a big Load Reload cat, too. So.
Ooh, nice.
So it was interesting getting this email from Nathan's brother. I'm Joel, Nathan Duggar's brother. I just got tickets for him and me to finally see Metallica live for the Bridgestone show in Nashville in January. I know he's talked to you guys about his love for the band, and he told me about the podcast, which fucking rules. We both get a kick out of the Load Reload test you give people because we do the same.
That's awesome.
I was thinking that maybe a cool segment for the show would be a before and after thoughts/interview on one's first Metallica show. I'd love to do that.
That's a great idea, yeah.
Maybe we can get Joel and Nathan to come because they live here in town.
So it's the first show for both of them, right?
First show for both of them.
Wow.
Yeah, well, hey, Joel, talk to Nathan. Let's stick a fork in that. The show's like 7 years away, so
yeah.
Hopefully we're all still alive when it happens.
Yeah, I think Metallica's set to release 2 more records before that show.
He says, when Nathan and I moved to Memphis from Phoenix some 20 years ago, we had no friends and knew nobody. I came across Metallica, shared it with Nathan, and it's been one of our biggest bonding subjects, along with Star Trek and James Bond, ever since. We cut our teeth playing the tab books. I had a Hamer Explorer, and Nathan, a drummer back then, wow, I didn't know that, had those heavy-ass Lars Ulrich drumsticks. Those were good times, and like most of us, the band helped us through some difficult and awkward times. Anyway, love the show. Keep up the good work. What really gets my dick hard is Metal Up Your Podcast. That's awesome, man.
That's a great image. He's just sitting in front of his computer with a boner listening to us.
A boner? This is a Beavis and Butthead episode now.
Yeah.
A boner.
Sorry.
I haven't said or heard that word in, beep, I don't know, 6 days.
I think it's a funny word.
A great word.
Also the name of Mike Seaver's best friend on Growing Pains. Did you ever watch that show when you were growing up?
No.
Maybe it was too old for you?
I don't know. I'm 34.
I'm 39.
I'm more than you. I'm this many.
I haven't pulled that one out in a while.
I'm this many. No, he was called Boner on the show because I looked at it. I asked my dad because I was like, Daddy, what's a boner? I'm this many.
No,
so he was called Boner?
Growing Pains. It was Kirk Cameron was the main star.
Wasn't that like a wholesome family
Alan
show?
Thicke. Yeah, it was like a evening sitcom kind of thing.
So they were calling him Boner like without irony.
His full name on the show was Richard Stabone. He was like an Italian kid, friends with Mike Seaver. If I remember right, as a kid watching that show, they met like at the first day of school at the bus stop. And he's like, my name's Richard Stabone, but everyone calls me Boner.
Wow, some really stoned writers built that
some
in.
Some stoned writers, for
some
sure.
Some pervert yeah. writers. All right, we got a few more here.
All right, Nick Roller, he says, this is our heavy metal lawyer friend, by the way.
I know, I want to write a jingle for him.
Yeah, we really need to. I have an idea. We'll talk about it after we record.
Okay, cool.
If I had found the backdrop, I certainly would have returned it, knowing its importance to the band. After many photos and much bragging to my best friend, of course, I think my request would have been a day at HQ with the band, get a tour, see Lars in his teeny shorts and bathrobe, that kind of thing. That sounds hot.
Speaking of boner. This is our most immature episode ever.
It's fairly immature, yeah, that's fine.
We had kind of like a lot of high philosophical talk about art and artists. And now we're just straight up devolved into boner town.
Exactly.
Sorry, listeners.
All right, Nick ends by saying, also just a thought, it might be a fun way to engage with us each week by throwing out a hashtag or month or whenever you feel like it. Like this past week could have been if I found the backdrop.
Hashtag if I found the backdrop.
That's cool. Maybe we should start doing... Yeah. Are hashtags cool these days, Clint?
I don't know. I try to stay until midnight and see what they put the hashtag on on MySpace, but...
Nick Roller, that's a really good idea. Maybe we can start doing that on the Twitter.
Well, I'll put it out to the fans too. I mean, they can always start one too. I mean,
that's true. And then so we'll jump on the hashtag train.
The hashtag train.
Right? Hashtag train. Hashtag boner. Hashtag Richard Stabone.
Okay. Always good to hear from Nick. Thanks, Nick. Our last email, Mike Landsman says, "Will you guys be going to different cities during the tour to promote your show? If not, maybe quote-unquote hire people to get a table and hand out your stuff. Awesome job on the podcast, guys. Hope to hear more awesome stuff this year, and I'd love to help out if I can. Mike, Ibanez 400 from the boards." Yeah, I recognize that, dude.
Well, Mike, you're hired.
I haven't thought about that. Of course, you know, our patrons do a lot. We have a lot of really devoted fans and dedicated listeners that either donate shit to the show or, you know, through Patreon support the show financially.
Yeah.
I don't know, would we want to ask fans to, I don't know. I know, you know, Sarah Sobeck wears her Metal Up Your Podcast shirts to Metallica shows. Chris Yerges has the enhanced experience. He will be meeting the band, and he's wearing the Metal Up Your Podcast
shirt. Yeah.
So, shit.
Lars is going to be on his phone going, bleep, 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 contact lawyer.
Yeah, send them a cease and desist immediately.
So, whenever that show that Chris is going to, which one was it?
I think he's doing Nashville, yeah.
Okay, so the day after the Nashville show will probably be the last day this podcast exists because Lars is going
to
hate us.
Well, again, we have 6 more years of beautiful episodes to get through.
Can't wait.
Hey, I appreciate that, Mike. We'll be thinking about some creative ways to see what we can do about maximizing our exposure on the tour, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
The best way is for Metallica to invite me to play guitar for their band.
Yeah, and I'd love to play second bass.
Yes.
Rhythm bass is fine. I don't have that big.
You don't have to play lead bass. No.
I can do the duck walk around Robert's crab walk or something. Might be kind
of
cool.
We'll do all sorts of animal walks. We'll come with the kangaroo walk.
Oh, the kangaroo walk is going to be bloody.
Well,
I'm going to
do the kangaroo walk, Paul. I'll do it, James. Let's get out of here.
Can we get out of here?
Can we get out of the emo corner?
I kind of want to get out of the emo corner.
Let's get out of the emo corner. Okay. Let's get the fuck out of here.
Hey, this is Ethan and Clint from Metal Up Your Podcast, and we want to talk to you about something we love called Patreon.
That's right. Patreon is a way for fans of the show to give back to the show, to donate money that helps us in quality and content. And not only that, but we've actually come up with all sorts of fun incentives to give back to you for supporting the show.
Exactly. For instance, if you donate $5 or more, you get access to Cover Our World Blackened, which is the official Metal Up Your Podcast Metallica cover EP.
That's right, and that's the only way to get it. In addition to the EP, we also give you priority email access, meaning we'll read your email first on the show. We give you early access to Patreon-exclusive merchandise, Patreon-exclusive giveaways, and any other side projects Ethan and I might be involved in.
There's all sorts of things you can look at on there and you can donate to. Go check it out, patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast. How do you spell that, Clint?
patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast. And if you really think about it, $5 a month for an entire year, that's really just like a cup of coffee a month. So go check it out. Thanks, everyone. Peace.
Adios. All right. A year, or in this case, years in the life of Metallica.
81, 82.
So, yeah. So like we said at the beginning of the show, normally this is just going to be 1 year, but because not much happened in 1981, we figured we'd combine these first 2 years. So once we hit 83, we'll be a year per episode.
Right. Well, because they did a lot more touring. They were putting out records. Yeah. They were blowing up, blah, blah, blah. So
right.
That ain't going to be hard. In fact, it might actually get hard to do like 91.
Are you talking about boners again?
Dude, I'm always talking. You can. There's a double meaning to everything I say.
When don't we talk about boners?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
The big four. Come on.
So let's take a little trip down to May 1981 in the Los Angeles area of California. As fate would have it, Lars put an ad in the Recycler. We all know the story. Looking for, what does the actual ad say? Looking for someone to jam with. Tigers of Pangtang was in the actual article.
Yeah. Well, Lars was taking a chance back then. He's like, he moved to America. He's drumming. He's like, fuck it. I want to start a band. Let's do this.
Right.
Puts an ad out, and then thank the good Lord of whatever Lord you believe in, Mr. Hugh Tanner.
Satan.
Okay, Clint. Well, Clint doesn't believe in Satan, but thank the good lunar Satan.
There we go.
That Mr. Hugh Tanner, James's friend and bandmate at the time.
Well, they were in Leather Charm, right?
Leather Charm. Yeah. Introduced James to Lars. After, well, there was the ad, and yeah, then they got introduced, and sparks flew, boners were had.
Well, you know what's actually interesting about it is sparks actually didn't fly at that thing, because sort of famously, Lars's hi-hat was falling over. James was, he's since mentioned, he was pretty unimpressed, and they didn't actually see each other again for 5 months, and that was when Lars actually went and followed, he kind of went and crashed on, you know, Diamond Head's couch and shit.
Yeah.
And followed Motorhead
then,
around and kind of got an education on being in a band.
Right, yeah.
And when he came back is when he sort of, as we would now know, has become typical of Lars, overcommitted himself to Brian Slagle's Metal Massacre. He got a slot on the compilation without even having a fucking band.
Right, yeah.
So that's when he calls James back up after all this time and says, look, let's just do it. We've already got a slot. That must have been pretty appealing for James, who, although he was unimpressed with Lars, went ahead with it.
Yeah.
They worked up Hit the Lights. And you heard, actually, what you heard at the top of the episode was the very first recording of Hit the Lights, where
right,
James played bass and another guitar.
Yeah, Lloyd Grant. Yeah. And as most of you probably know, there are two versions of that from two different, like a re-release of Metal Massacre.
They re-recorded it, yeah.
Yeah.
First pressing had the original version.
Yep.
So October 28th, 1981 is the official form date of Metallica.
Right.
Again, for the Metal Massacre comp. And they also got Dave in by putting an ad in the same Recycler.
Yeah. Lars put another ad in the Recycler looking for a lead guitarist. In his own words, Mustaine remembers his first meeting with James and Lars, and he says, quote, I was in the room warming up, and I walked out and asked, like, he's just warming up outside the rehearsal room. And
probably just fucking wailing.
Oh, yeah. And he walked out and asked, well, am I going to audition or what? And they said, nope, you got the job.
I've seen other interviews where they said that they basically hired him because he impressed them with his gear.
I mean, I've definitely been in that position when I was younger, like in high school and stuff, where like I auditioned for a local band in high school that I got set up, you know, with another friend. And I remember showing up and seeing this dude's drum set, and it was just huge. It was like what I saw Lars playing. Like, it was like 8 toms, 2 kick drums, 5 crashes. And I just walked in going, this guy's good. He has to be good.
Well,
right?
When you're young, it's hard to get good gear. I mean, I remember, you know, being sort of middle class, maybe even lower middle class, and trying to keep up with my peers, not even musically speaking, but
right, yeah.
you know, my friend got the he got a your fucking Marshall combo, and he got a new Fender Strat, and I'm playing a PV Strat copy and a Crate amp with, that I'm having to push the distortion on the amp itself.
Yeah, you didn't have a foot switch or anything.
I remember he got his first distortion pedal. It was my friend Matt Harris. He got a Rocktron extortion pedal.
Ooh.
Is what it was called. And just the thought of being able to turn distortion on with your foot was magic.
Oh,
to
yeah.
Me.
When you're a young guitar player and you get your first distortion pedal.
Oh, you huge.
Dude, I was fortunate because my dad was a guitar player, still is. My first distortion pedal was an original MXR Script Distortion Plus.
What he means by script is it's a Script logo.
Yeah, they don't do that anymore.
It's those are badass.
It was like 70s, early 80s that MXR did that. I have since lost it. I mean, probably 15 to 20 years ago.
Maybe we can
ago.
Get Wayne Summers to find it for you.
You know what? He is a superhero. Yeah. Wayne, I know you're listening. Can you find the original MXR Script Distortion Plus my dad gave me back in 1994?
We know you have the new Wherever I May Roam black ticket, but we need you to not go to any shows this year and just commit yourself. Yeah. Prioritize finding Ethan's Script logo MXR right. pedal.
But no, what you're saying about, you know, the boys being impressed by Mustaine's gear, like, I get that. You just described it. I mean, I had a friend, this guy Jeremy, I grew up, you know, around... He was kind of like the rich kid, but I remember he was the first guy I knew that owned a half stack.
Yeah, I remember
Carvin.
That. Oh, Carvin.
It was, but he also had a couple like Jackson V's.
Was
like,
he a Steve Vai fan? He had that Carvin Legacy.
No. He had that. That was later, I think.
That was like 90s.
This still was 90s. This would have been like 92, 93, yeah, like early high school.
I think
for
Steve
me.
Vai's thing was like 98.
But he also had like the Randy Rhodes Jackson V and stuff, and he was kind of a rich
polka
kid.
Dot.
Then the polka dot one was the other one that kind of had like the pinstriping on
oh,
it.
Oh yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
I'm talking about
yeah.
But yeah, it's so exciting, and when you look at something like that, when you've never owned it and couldn't dream of owning it, you think, oh, this guy's got to be a badass. So I'm sure these dudes looked at Mustaine going like, oh my gosh, that's an amazing BC Rich you have. Or
whereas these days, it's just such a given that everyone's going to have good gear. It's no one who's really working has shitty gear.
Or now you see someone on their pedal board is like as big as my driveway.
It's a space,
and you're
it's a
like,
space station.
Okay, I don't care. Can you just play through a Distortion Plus, please?
Yeah. It's actually, the trends are kind of moving away from that now, back to really simple shit.
Good.
Kits have moved back from having racks and 100 concert toms. They've moved back to more of a Ludwig type or a Rogers kit, simple kits, three pieces, four pieces.
I think that's been going on longer than
the pedalboard
thing. I think people are, especially here in Nashville, if you go out to a gig and you see some dude who has just like a super crazy setup, and it's just... Come on, you don't need all that stuff. I mean, I'm looking at my pedal board right now, and there's...
I'm looking at you looking at your pedal board. I see stars in your eyes.
Do you have a boner?
Always.
But Thank yeah, I've got, you know, five or six pedals on there.
Right.
You know, it's not much. I've never owned a rack of pedals or any of this stuff. I've always been a less is more kind of person. But
especially in the boner department. You bonered right into that one.
I really did. But yeah, so back to the boys here. So whether it was they heard him noodling and warming up, or it was his gear, maybe a combination of both.
And not to take anything away from, I mean, Dave can play his ass off. So
of course,
I'm sure he was very impressive at the time for what they were used to. You know, especially if James was kind of the one holding down the guitar.
Well, but at the time, James was still kind of reluctant on playing guitar.
Live, yeah.
Yeah, live. Yeah, he wanted just to be the singer. I mean, the first show, he didn't even play guitar.
He didn't play guitar for several shows.
And so I'm sure hearing Dave play, it was like, oh man,
he can handle it.
I'm off the hook for playing guitar now. Right. Just listen to this guy,
man. But who would have thought though? I mean, I'm sure it was not even occurred to James that he would go on to be such an amazing, important guitar player.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
With his own line of signature guitars, his own sound, his own flavor.
Yeah. What would have happened? Your own line of signature microphones,
your own line of signature leopard gloves. And spiked fucking wrist cuffs.
Yeah. I mean, I'd buy them.
I mean, of course, I'd put them on my boner. But oh, man, this is definitely not safe for work episode.
You might want to wear your earbuds, your headphones at work when you listen to this one.
So March 14th, this is their first show, right? At Radio City?
Yeah, Radio City in Anaheim, California. Like, I'm from that area, and someone will maybe correct this. I'm not sure when this venue closed, but I know it closed well before I was into music. But this was their first official show. It was James, Lars, Dave, and Ron McGeveny. first time ever on stage together at Radio City in Anaheim. And we talked about this when we did a revisited on the anniversary of the first ever show. It was mostly cover songs, new wave of British heavy metal songs, but they also had Hit the Lights and Jump in the Fire.
I've got the set list right here. Yeah. This was the live debut of every one of these songs, obviously, is there for sure. Which, by the way, on their website, they have the poster from that show, and it's pretty funny. It's the picture, the same picture from the Leopard Glove
from Ron's garage, right?
Right. And it says Metallica, which they've already got their bitchin' logo.
Oh, yeah.
That's the same logo. But below it, in parentheses, it says Metalus Maximus.
Metalus Maximus.
And then below it, below the picture, it says the Young Metalla Attack. Metal Attack. here's the set list that they played. Hit the Lights, Blitzkrieg, Helpless, Jump in the Fire, Let It Loose, Sucking My Love, Am I Evil, The Prince, and Killing Time.
But what's cool about that back then is that because the new wave of British heavy metal wasn't really like a big thing
people
in California.
Thought those were originals.
I'm for sure they did. They had to have. I mean, even when I got into Metallica, I didn't know that Am I Evil wasn't their song.
Dude, I was in a cover band in Birmingham, and one of my favorite bands at the time, still one of my all-time favorite bands of all fucking time, is a band called the Damwells, this Brooklyn-based kind of pop rock band.
Don't they live here now?
No.
No?
Ted, the bass player, lives in Colorado. We still keep up. He's a friend of mine. Alex Deason, the main guy, lives in L.A.
Okay, so I wasn't even close.
And the other guys are still in Brooklyn, I believe. They don't exist anymore, sadly. But everyone needs to go check that out, by the way, the Damwells. Just go listen to anything they did.
It's a great band name, too, by the way.
Probably from 2000, 2003. So a cover band I was in Birmingham, we had to play three-hour-long sets. And we would just play for people who weren't even really paying attention. Sometimes they would, but we were such big Damwells fans that we had our first set was us as the Shit Yeahs, and all we played were Damwell songs. And
Shit Yeahs.
Yeah, because they're the Damwells.
Yeah.
But they weren't well enough known for people to know that those weren't covers.
Right.
And so people would be like, the songs they cared about the most in the whole night were these Damwell songs. And they'd be like, oh, man, what is that? You know, we'd have to be like, no, we didn't write these.
It's somebody else's.
We can't write songs this good yet. Anyway, okay, sorry, yeah. Derailed. So, Radio City, their first show, March 14th, Dave famously had to do some crowd control. Oh, no, James did had to do crowd control because Dave broke a string.
Dave broke a string, and it took him 10 minutes to change the
Which 10 minutes, of course, on stage time is a fucking eternity.
It's an eternity. And I've definitely been in that position before as, like, an early guitar player in bands when I was in high school where you don't think about, like, oh, I need a backup guitar. Because guess what? I had one guitar.
Oh, dude, totally.
I owned one guitar, and I would.
Hey, can you bring a backup guitar? Excuse me?
Can you loan me
$1,000?
Yeah, exactly. But I remember doing like gigs when I was in high school, like whether it was like at a local church or like at some random youth center to an actual venue.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember like, you know, 2 weeks prior, like I broke a string practicing at home. Me and my dad go down to the music store. I get a set of strings.
Yeah,
one.
Totally.
Restring my guitar, and you just play the strings until they broke.
Yeah.
And I remember breaking a string in the middle of a set. I've changed strings in the middle of a show before.
Oh, yeah.
Like back in high school and
me
stuff.
Me too.
Yeah.
Real stressful.
Very stressful.
So I feel their pain. It's interesting that happened on their very first show. Their next show would be a couple of weeks later in Woodstock, March 26th. I don't know if there's anything super notable about that show. Let me click on it here. Oh, I actually don't have that. So on the flyer, it says March 14th, Radio City, and then March 26th at Woodstock. But I guess that show didn't happen because it's not on there. The next show they played was the 27th at the Whiskey A Go-Go. And they played that with Saxon.
That's your second show.
And that was billed as, on the flyer, the heaviest night of your life.
Heaviest night of your life.
And they played two shows, one at 9 and one at 11:30.
Yeah, it was a matinee, or not really a matinee, but yeah, 9, 11:30.
And since they were opening for Saxon, they played a shorter set, similar songs, they debuted Metal Militia. You know, Metal Militia's, if you've heard any of our Kill 'Em All shit, it's not one of my favorites. I know you like that one a lot. But
sure.
It does give me a bit of a chill to see the live debut of Metal Militia.
I know, isn't that weird?
It's so cool.
Yeah.
And you know, they played around 28 shows that year.
Yeah.
I went and looked through all the set list today, and it's cool to see like the debut of Whiplash, debut of Sequence.
Right, yeah, because they're writing all these songs technically their second year, but that whole year they're developing songs, writing things for what would become Kill 'Em All, and debuting them live. And as you and I both know, And anyone listening that's been in a band, it's so exciting to debut a new song live when your record's not out yet. You have, maybe haven't even recorded a record yet. And I mean, nowadays, it's a little, bands that size like Metallica, they might debut a song, you know, they'll debut the single like right after it's been released. You know, but big bands like that don't, you know.
Well, you know, they
with the
debuted,
exception of Lords of Summer. They don't
Lords
really
Summer,
do that.
They did Vulturous, which was a song that they did. They debuted Cyanide before it came out.
Yeah. But when you're younger, it's like the second you have a new song done, oh, we're playing that shit live.
I mean, that's the way it should be.
Yeah.
It's fucking fresh.
Right.
You know, I mean, I was listening to, I got to give this dude another shout out, dude. This Sabbath Bloody podcast.
Yeah.
Such a cool show, man. Like I've been, as listeners of our show know, I kind of went through a Sabbath thing last year for the first time in my life, really. So I'm enjoying kind of learning about them through this podcast, but he talks about how they were like writing songs in the van on the way to the show.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
That's
I remember,
so awesome.
Do you remember doing, like, I remember doing that.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Like putting the finishing touches on a bridge or something in the fucking van. Someone's
like, hey,
got
we're playing this tonight.
Someone's got a guitar out. Yeah.
You know who still does that?
You too.
Billy Corgan.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, I don't know if you're a huge Pumpkins fan or not.
Oh, massive.
But
he's a bit of a strange cat, but...
Strange cat, very intelligent, very nice. I've met him and hung out with him. He's super nice.
I like him a lot.
But I don't know if I mentioned this on the podcast before, but I have a friend named Ginger out in California I've known since like junior high.
Oh, and she was going to get the Pumpkins gig, right?
No, she played in Pumpkins.
Oh, okay.
When they reformed in like mid-2000s, early 2000s, when it was just basically Billy and Jimmy Chamberlain,
mm-hmm.
then they got Jeff Schroeder on guitar, and then they mm-hmm. were auditioning.
Jeff Schroeder's still in the band.
Yeah, he is. They were, you know, want a female bass player. Darcy wasn't doing it for whatever reason, and my friend Ginger ended up getting the gig.
Cool.
But she would tell me, like, they did that residency when they first, they did a residency in France, I believe, in Paris. Their first U.S. shows, they did a 9 or 10 night residency at the Orange Peel in Asheville, North Carolina.
Oh, yeah. I've played that club many times.
Yeah, it's a great club.
Weird.
And so me and my wife drove out to it to go hang out with Ginger and go to the show and stuff like that. I photographed the show because she got me a photo pass. But I was like, how are the shows going out here? She was like, they're really cool. It's just frustrating because like every morning at like 8 a.m., Billy will text all of us like, hey, I wrote a new song last night. We're going to open with it tonight.
He's an artist, man. He's the real deal.
Yeah, that guy's probably written thousands of songs.
Well, and he was on the Joe Rogan podcast recently, and
which is a great episode, by the way.
It really is great. A lot of interesting insider info on the reformation of the Pumpkins, the music industry.
Oh yeah, the music industry stuff's great.
But he
even him as a person, when he talks about his persona on stage versus off stage.
Yeah.
Anyone that's like, oh, he's fucking weird, and he's this and that. It's like, listen to this podcast.
It's a little thing called show business.
Sorry, I keep clearing my throat. I played a rock show last night.
Jeez.
Okay, I think I'll be all right.
Are we done talking about Smashing Pumpkins? Or do you want to keep talking about them?
I just wanted to talk about the tour coming up. And
oh, yeah, they announced an arena tour.
Apparently it's selling terribly.
No.
Yeah. Well, it's not all four originals.
Is it Live Nation?
Probably, I don't know.
But is DRC really going to be pulling in those tickets? Is the reason that, I mean, you got Jimmy and James Iha and Billy Corgan, and they're only playing shit from Gish.
The first five records, right?
Up till Siamese Dream?
No, it's a little after that.
They're doing Melancholy.
And I think the one after that.
Machines of the Gods?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, let's get on a Pumpkins tangent real quick.
Oh yeah, I'm fucking fine with that.
Because... So a lot of people, if you're a Pumpkins fan...
I did not know it was selling poorly.
There was just an article about it. Like, somebody basically went online to buy tickets, and it showed like...
Because it's a big tour.
Yeah, so this dude went online and wrote this blog about it or whatever, went online to buy tickets, and he went to check for availability, and it shows the map of the arena, and it shows the available seating, and it was like 75% is still available.
No.
Yeah. So...
Let's try to be thorough here. I'm looking it up as we speak. The general tickets did go on sale. I saw the big announcement.
Yeah, it's on sale. If you're looking it up right now, you'll hopefully find that article.
Five reasons the Smashing Pumpkins reunion tour is selling poorly.
There you go.
Oh no.
So here's one thing. whether Darcy would help that thing sell better or not, because it would be the original four, I don't know. But she has come out numerous times since the rumors of this happening, basically like Dog and Billy Corgan saying like they're excluding me from it, blah blah blah. If you listen to that podcast with Joe Rogan and I think in general, I think he has a really good reason that she's not doing it. Now, I know this for a fact. When they were reforming back in the mid-2000s, the reason that she wasn't doing it, what I heard, which was pretty close to firsthand, was that she was still pretty messed up.
Yeah, well, that's what I've been hearing.
Yeah.
Now, what she has done in this time around is Billy Corgan, the camp has basically come out and said, hey, we're trying to get her to do it, but she's difficult. And what she did is she released their text messages.
Oh, she did? I didn't see that.
Which seemed to indicate that she wasn't being difficult.
Really?
But you know, man, you know how that goes with money, and maybe she's got an agent or a manager saying, hey, you know, we need to play hardball with what they're offering you because you're an original member. But you know, it's interesting because that band, they were definitely at a time when bands mattered. I knew who the fuck the RC was.
Of course, yeah.
I knew who James Iha was, and I sure as hell knew who Jimmy Chamberlain was.
Exactly, yeah.
But looking back on it now, like re-engineering it, of course it was all Billy and Jimmy.
Yeah, it's pretty much those two.
Billy even played the lead guitar. James Iha didn't even play lead guitar.
Yeah. And I always heard rumors that like Darcy didn't play much bass on records.
The fourth reason this article is listing for the reasons that the tour is not selling well is that fans want Darcy on board. Even before it went public, the Pumpkins reunion tour had been tainted by Corgan and Darcy's digital falling out and Darcy's total exclusion from the venture. To a degree, Corgan's skepticism about welcoming her back into the fold as a full-time bass player makes sense. The two ostensibly haven't spoken face-to-face in 18 years. Darcy admitted to having a shoulder injury over text, and it's quite possible she hasn't picked up a bass in years.
Okay, then, and Billy is a very, very great musician, and I would say probably a perfectionist.
Seems like it.
And if it was like, okay, all the bullshit aside, can you play bass right now? When was the last time you played bass? Oh, it's been 8 years.
That's dicey.
Okay.
That's well, DRC.
That's DRC. That's D-I-C. I mean, who knows what the truth is, but
it makes me sad that it's not selling well. I don't want it to.
Yeah, me
too.
I
want it to succeed.
I mean, is it going to sell bad enough where they cancel it? Or is it going to be a thing where you go to the arena?
This is saying that there are hundreds and in some markets, thousands of unsold tickets. Now, if you're playing Bridgestone, which is 20,000.
If there's hundreds of unsold tickets, that's not a big deal.
No. I mean, if they sell 15,000 tickets, the show goes on. If they sell 10,000 tickets, the show goes on. What they do, for those of you who don't know, is like, you'll have the second and third tiers in an arena. They black them out.
They black them out,
They put curtains down. You can't even see that no one's up there.
If it's really selling bad, oftentimes they move the stage up.
They'll move the stage up into the center of the arena, right?
I almost feel like they should have just gotten back together and done like
a record or something.
Well, either that or get like the way when they got back together initially where it was just Billy and Jimmy.
They did like clubs.
Do like, or even like big theaters at first.
Mm.
You know, come to Nashville and do the War Memorial or whatever.
You know,
something that's maybe like 3,000 to 5,000 cap rooms rather than going straight to arenas.
It's sad, man. You know, Manson's playing House of Blues.
Yeah.
It makes me sad.
I mean, I played for 20 people last night, but I never had a heyday.
Well, think about, Melancholy won the Grammy. Marilyn Manson from 96 to 2000 was one of the biggest things on the planet.
I mean, the Pumpkins were,
they were huge.
Melancholy and Siamese Dream were
huge.
Giant records.
The huge cultural
icon
records.
For sure. I mean, I would even venture to say that oftentimes Billy Corgan's kind of forgotten as one of those like 90s icons.
Oh, he'll tell you about it too.
Yeah, that's true.
He'll tell you that he's unappreciated as a songwriter.
Right.
It's really like at one point in the Joe Rogan interview, Joe Rogan's like, man, he's like, you were in the fucking Smashing Pumpkins. That's got to be like top 100 bands of all time. And Billy Corgan's like, yeah, I'd put us in there.
I'd put us there, yeah.
Which he's right, but it's still kind of like, he rubs me a little bit. But I think he's such an interesting dude, and he's got a little bit of the Axl Rose in him.
He does.
A little bit, and I miss that in rock and roll.
Well, and even in that interview, they talk about Axl.
Yeah.
And they talk about the newly formed Guns N' Roses.
Right.
With him and Slash. It's kind of like him and James Iha is kind of like Axl and Slash.
Yeah, except Billy Corgan's is Axl and Slash.
Right, in one.
But it's like who's the only guy with that kind of edge now is like Josh Homme. Or Home, or however you say it.
Which he's almost proven to be a pretty blatant dick.
Right. But so was Axl.
So was Axl. I mean, I feel like Billy Corgan is way more intelligent than these dudes. Maybe not Axl, but like Josh Homme, Homme, whatever. And I love Queens of the Stone Age. I'm not trying to dog him or not. I think Josh Homme is just like when controversy happens, he's just trying to start controversy.
Yeah,
and with no with
the Prince song.
No, yeah, with no with no thought of repercussions. You know, it's like when he kicked that photographer in the fucking face, and he's like,
"That wasn't cool.
It was I didn't mean to." Blah blah blah. Whatever his reasonings were, so it was like, dude, you were being a fucking asshole. Just say I was being a fucking asshole.
Right.
You know, we're way tangenty tonight.
Okay.
Too.
Well, here's something I actually didn't know. We're still in 1982, April 23rd, 1982. This is strange. Metallica attempts to perform a show as a five-piece, including Brad Parker, also known as Damian C. Phillips, on second guitar, and the only note we have is his performance did not go over well. This was at the Concert Factory, and the set list looks pretty normal for what they were doing in Costa Mesa, California?
Costa Mesa, yeah.
They were on that bill with Leatherwolf and Crocus.
Leatherwolf.
That's pretty bitchin'.
No laugh to a Leatherwolf.
Want to kick some wolves tonight?
Got any wolves out there?
Yeah, of Leatherwolf and man.
There it is.
Let's move along. Let's move along through the year, shall we? Come with us on the journey.
Please join us.
May 25th, 1982. They performed at Lars's high school, also in Costa Mesa.
I didn't until I started making notes for this, I didn't realize that Lars actually went to high school in Costa Mesa.
Back Bay High School.
That's not terribly far. So I grew up in Long Beach, which is north of Costa Mesa. And then when I was maybe 11, we moved down to Mission Viejo, which Costa Mesa and Mission Viejo are both in Orange County. And so, I mean, Costa Mesa hung out in a lot. There was venues up there I played. That's where... my blankets, Costa Mesa, like when Guitar Center opened up, the closest one to me was in Costa Mesa off a street called Euclid. So yeah, I mean, just cool. Lars went to school there. That's awesome. But this was the first show that James both sang and played guitar.
Now here's something really strange about this show. So they have the flyer for it also on Metallica's website. It totally handmade, written.
Oh, like pencil.
So check this out. Metallica Live. Back Bay High School, Tuesday, May 25th, 11:15 a.m. What the fuck? Is that a mistake?
You know what it might have been? It might have been something where they played like a lunchtime.
That's thing. What I'm saying.
Because I did that in high school.
I've done it.
Yeah. We did like cover sets and stuff.
Did you ever do like the NACA circuit or whatever, where you go to colleges, but you play like during the day in a cafeteria?
Never did that. We just did our own high school.
It's totally soul crushing, by the way.
I'm sure.
Dream crushing, soul crushing, boner killing, boner destroying, playing for people eating a fucking pizza who could not give a shit.
Yeah. No, I only did that kind of stuff at my own high school. And the only reason we did it was because A, we wanted to play together, and B, it got us out of like three classes.
Live debut of Motor Breath.
Awesome.
While someone's eating their fucking mashed potatoes.
Bologna sandwich, yeah.
I just can't imagine them doing Hit the Lights at that, dude.
I mean, it's got to be, if it's 11:15 in the morning?
11:15? That's lunchtime.
It's got to be the lunch hour for students.
And Jesus, they're playing fucking Jump in the Fire, and you can hear the bell ring to excuse
maybe
lunch.
Maybe that's when James is like, for whom the bell tolls.
Time to go back to fourth period.
Yeah. there's actually awesome footage of Rage Against the Machine early on playing it. I believe it's at... Mike, correct me on this. I think it's UCI and Irvine. Could be wrong, but there. It was like before they were like the Rage that we all know and love, and they were playing to a bunch of like college students.
And what would I use to look this up?
Rage Against the Machine. I don't know.
I'm like a producer now.
You are.
Rage Against the Machine. What year would it have been? Like 88 or something?
Would have been like 89 or 90, maybe. I would just look up like Rage Against the Machine playing at college lunchtime or something. I don't know. It's really cool though, because it's those dudes and they're playing like a lot of the songs that you know and love from that first record, but sometimes the lyrics aren't even made up or...
college show.
You find it?
Here's one from 92, Claremont, California. Oh, Rage Against the Machine first public performance.
There it is.
Oh, shit.
Was it Claremont? It's straight up like in the quad.
They're playing on like this outside stage. It's at the Quad, Cal State Northridge.
Yeah, Northridge, that's right.
October 23rd, 91. Let me try to get into a song here. Oh, here we go. Take the Power Back? Is that their opening with? Bum, bum, bum. Oh, no, wait.
No, don't.
Oh, is this Killing in the Name of?
You can't
of?
Hear the bass.
This is Killing in the Name of, Killing in the Name of. Tom Morello wearing a tucked-in shirt.
Isn't that crazy? You've never seen this?
No.
It's pretty fascinating.
Bum, 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 bum. Let's hear what Zach De La Rocha sounds like.
Extended.
Extended long, intro, yeah, for their long, first show.
Yeah, longer than the original.
Well, this is the only song they had. They just played it for 40 minutes. Come on, Zach.
Wait for it.
Wow.
Yeah, a little different. You might want to fast forward a little bit.
He's coming up to the mic stand. He's untwirling the mic. He's going to put that mic stand back behind. Tom Morello already making weird sounds.
Oh, yeah.
God damn, dudes. Come on.
Sing something.
Oh, they got the check 1-2. Classic.
Clint looks so annoyed.
Dude, this is brutal. Here we go. Oh, now the intro starts.
Well, it's a different song now.
Oh, it was Take the Power Back.
No, it's a different song now.
Oh.
Take the power back.
Come on! Come on!
I mean, they sound pretty damn good for this. This would have been, was that 91?
This is 92. So, I mean, this is right before their, oh, this is 91. So, this is right before their debut
came out.
Came
92.
Out. Yeah. Dude, that's one of the most badass debuts of all time.
Of all time. And that was pre-rap rock. I mean, the only thing rap rock, first of all, that wasn't even really a term back then. The only thing before that that was really rap and rock together would be Run DMC and Aerosmith.
It would be 7 to 8 years before Limp Bizkit would perfect the art form.
Exactly.
Let's move right along. This is a Metallica podcast.
Is it? Is it really?
I don't know anymore.
Apparently it's like a boner podcast. And
June 14th, 1982, Brian Slagle's Metal Massacre compilation is finally released.
Finally.
The first pressing of Metal Massacre featured, as we mentioned before, Hit the Lights, guitar solos by Lloyd Grant and Dave Mustaine, James Tripling on rhythm guitar, vocals, and bass. They later re-recorded it for the second pressing, featuring Mustaine on lead guitar and McGovney on bass.
Kind of crazy that Mustaine and Lloyd Grant played on the first version. But maybe they started recording it on like a four-track and Lloyd Grant did
unclear.
It. And then Mustaine came in and like, oh, why don't you do the second solo or something?
What I wanted to do, like, I want to kind of pause here for a second and talk about the Smashing Pumpkins. I'm just kidding. Let's talk about their demo tapes. Let's kind of go through.
Yeah, there was a whole slew of demo tapes No Life to Leather.
Yeah, and these are important. So let's just kind of go through them. The first one that we all know of is called the Whiskey Audition Tape. And it was just two cover songs. It was Killing Time and Let It Loose by Sweet Savage and Savage, respectively. Recorded in Rob McGovney's garage during rehearsals in March of 1982. And it was on the merits of this demo tape that they got the gig to open for Saxon on their second show.
Second show.
At the Whiskey. So that's cool.
That's great.
Then we have what's called Ron McGovney's 82 Garage Demo. Clever title. Also recorded in McGovney's garage. No shit. March 1982. Says, although the demo has never been officially released, it's been in wide circulation in various bootleg versions. Apart from the songs listed below, which was Hit the Lights, Jump in the Fire, Sucking My Love, Diamond Head, The Prince, Am I Evil, and Helpless. This is interesting. It said this demo also consisted of songwriting ideas and various unreleased riffs that have also been bootlegged. One track consisted of riffs and ideas that would later go on to become both Metallica and Megadeth songs. Commonly titled as Jam.
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 You ever seen that James Brown hammered on TV?
In the interview when he's in Atlanta?
Yes.
Oh, it's incredible.
Let's insert that.
It is insane.
You guys are about to go on a fucking ride with James Brown. Check this out.
And we welcome you, James Brown. How did all of this trouble begin?
Living in America. Something wrong.
Nothing wrong at all. You're not in any difficulty, but you're out on bond.
No, I'm not.
All the charges been dropped?
Yeah, I'm out on love.
Are you out on love or out of love? Which is it?
Out on love. alone from night to night, you find me.
Now, James, this isn't the first time you and your wife have had a problem. Are the two of you going to be able to work this out?
Let's talk about some music.
You want to talk about music and you don't want to talk about what happened?
No, it's all over.
Well, let's talk about your tour. When are you leaving?
We're leaving tomorrow.
And where are you going?
Rio de Janeiro and Sao Paulo, Brazil.
Now, your fans will have read all about this, James. Aren't you concerned about that?
No, Dagestan. I'm concerned because there's nothing wrong.
And what are you going to say to your fans when they ask you some questions about it?
I'm going to say I feel good. Papa's got a brand new bag. It's a man's world.
Well, that's the second time we've heard that in 2 days. That's very interesting. Now, don't leave us, James. You stay right there.
I'm not going to leave
out. We have to talk about. Well, tell us a little bit about what you're going to be doing
Dad.
On this tour.
What'd you say?
What are you going to be doing on this tour?
I'm going to be doing Papa's Got a Brand New Bag, Living in America, Sex Machine, Get Up Off of That Thing. I feel good. Jam.
Dude, he's so wasted.
I feel good.
I want to talk about some music.
He was, oh my God, he was unbelievable. So fucked up.
All right, so it says the other track was a melodic piece played by James and Ron, widely known on YouTube as Unreleased Kill 'Em All Song. It says the validity of these two tracks was confirmed by Ron McGovney himself during a 1996 interview with Shockwaves and also via the Metallica BB Forum, which, by the way, went on that BB Forum about a year ago when we started our podcast. Not very friendly, folks.
Oh, really?
No, I posted like, hey, I'm starting a new Metallica podcast with my friend Ethan. First few episodes, kill them all, and whatever, Cliff, whatever our first episodes were. And someone wrote, this sounds terrible. That was one of the comments.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
And the other one was, please stop posting this here.
Jeez.
To which I wrote, stop posting about my all Metallica podcast on a Metallica fan forum. Okay, you guys are some strange people. Next, we have the Power Metal demo. That was the name given to the demo, recorded sometime in April of 82. Although the demo was never officially released, it was given the bootleg name Power Metal after the tagline McGovney had printed on Metallica's first business cards.
That's back when you made business cards for your band.
The tape contained four original songs, including the two new songs, The Mechanics, written by David Mustaine Esquire, and Motor Breath, written by Mr. Jimmy James Hetfield Sr. Jr. It was also, like previous demos, recorded in Ron McGovney's garage.
I think Ron finally quit because he was tired of the dudes just recording their garage.
He's like, guys, get out of my fucking garage.
Seriously, I'm trying to work on my car.
Yeah. I keep my tools in here. All right. Next, Beloved, No Life Till Leather. We have a whole episode on it. That was what found its way to Johnny Zazula, who then gave them their first record deal on Megaforce Records.
And that one's interesting because we talk about this on that episode, so go listen to it if you haven't. But Hetfield kind of sounds real Mustaine-y.
He does.
I remember getting the Record Store Day re-release of the cassette, which I picked one up for you. Mm-hmm. And I remember listening to it going like, is that Mustaine?
Right.
You know? But James was also still doing that new wave of British heavy metal kind of singing where he was.
Well, yeah, and he hadn't found his voice. I mean, he found it by playing all these shows.
Yeah, exactly. He found it by playing at 11:15 a.m. in Costa Mesa, California.
During Bologna hour.
Yeah.
We all know about No Left to Leather. It was a really important demo for many reasons.
Yeah.
It was heavily traded amongst all the metalheads in the country, and it was one of the reasons they were able to go tour with Raven, and people knew what the fuck Whiplash was.
Yeah, exactly.
They did that all for Kill 'Em All for one tour, I think, before many people had Kill 'Em All.
Yeah.
All right, and the last thing we'll mention, the last thing that bootleg-wise from 1982 is the live Metal Up Your Ass, which was at their November 29th, 1982 show at the Old Waldorf in San Francisco. Supporting band was Exodus, featuring their soon-to-be lead guitar player, Mr. Kirk Hammett.
Amazing.
Kirk Von Hammett.
Kirk Von Hammersting.
The band played all of its original material, 9 songs total, that they had written up to that point, which was basically what was on the No Life to Leather demo. All 9 of which would essentially be the entirety of their debut album, minus Anesthesia. 2 covers of Diamond Head songs were played, Am I Evil and The Prince. However, The Prince was not recorded as the tape ran out before the full duration of the band set. I don't think anyone's missing that. Both the name and the album cover of the demo were to be reused for the band's debut studio album, which was going to be called Metal Up Your Ass, which is where we got our lovely podcast moniker from.
Right.
But of course, the goddamn corporate man stopped them from expressing their true vision, which was, as we all know and love, a dagger coming out of a fucking toilet.
Do you think that it would have affected their future career one way or the other if it was called Metal Up Your Ass with a dagger coming out of the toilet? Or would it have given them even more exposure because it would have been so controversial?
My gut feeling is that it would not have affected. If they were going to still write those Ride the Lightning tunes, I think they were going to be fine. If they had Creeping Death and For Whom the Bell Tolls and Fade to Black in their back pocket, you can call that record Boner, and it would have been
Bone the Lightning.
Bone them all. Master of Boners. And Boners for All. I'm just going to keep doing it.
Creeping
and,
Boner.
And of course, just Boner. And Boner and Reboner. Saint Boner. Garage Boner.
Fight Boner with Boner.
Boner Magnetic.
Oh my gosh.
Boner, Boner to Self-Destruct. Oh my God.
Some kind of Boner.
Oh my God. Beyond Boner.
Sweet Boner.
Cunning Boners.
The Unnamed Boner.
Sad But Boner. Spit out the boner.
There it is. We finally got to it. There it is.
I am a wordsmith. Songs are my life. Words are my life. Okay.
That's the closest thing to the church giggles we've had in a while. My God.
Where are we at on this? God damn.
We're almost done because it's not a super busy year. But.
So December 19, 1982, after nearly a year as Metallica's bass player, let's give it up. We're going to say goodbye to Ron McGovney. Exit stage left. Exit through the gift shop.
That's right.
You know, he wasn't the dude to go all the way with him.
He wasn't. But he seems like over the years has been like a super cool dude. Like he's down for interviews.
No,
he was at the 30th anniversary shows with that original bass.
He's a huge part of the fabric of the legend of Metallica.
Of course, yeah. I mean, imagine being...
What garage would they have lived in?
We wouldn't have all these... All these demos would sound a lot different from someone else's garage.
Where would we have gotten the goddamn whiskey audition demo?
Yeah, exactly.
Of them playing cover songs.
But isn't it crazy to think that like Metallica went on to become such a huge band that their bass player of 1 year is still talked about to this day?
Well, that's Dave Mustaine's entire career.
Well, it's his career, but you don't see Ron McGovney sitting there complaining about Metallica or whatever. Well, he chose to quit the band, but still, like, pretty bitching, though, that if someone's, like, reaches out to him on whether he's on Facebook or something, and it's like, and has a question, like, that dude he's always seemed very, like, straightforward with, like, talking about Metallica. Like, yeah, sure.
And I got to tell you, man, I think his bass playing is absolutely cool on No Life Till Leather.
It's awesome.
I mean, everyone knows how much we fucking love and adore Cliff. That dude was a fucking alien. Hendrix level.
Yeah.
But Ron, you know, he did a good job, man.
And if you're not hip to our No Life Till Leather episode, the original cassette was Ron McGovney playing, but
Cliff is credited.
Cliff is credited, yeah.
But it's incorrect.
It's incorrect.
Do you think Cliff? Or do you think that Ron quit because of Dave?
It's possible.
That would be a bummer.
Or he's just tired of them being in the garage all the time
with Dave.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's obviously like back then. You know, we all know all the stories.
Nice knowing you, Ron.
Nice knowing you, Ron.
Oh, tell it to the readers. Oh, you're quitting.
Tell it to Metal Massacre.
Tell it to.
Tell it to my boner.
Tell it to Brian Slagle's boner. December 28th. Really important day. It was the first rehearsal with Cliff. We know the story.
Then when you see him,
the boys saw Trauma playing at the Whiskey.
The Whiskey.
And we're fucking blown away by Cliff was playing, I guess what went on to be Pulling Teeth. He was playing his big solo moment with his wah pedal, his envelope filter. They said they heard it and thought it was a lead guitar player.
Yeah.
And all they saw was his hair head banging, and they said, this guy's got to be in the fucking band.
He has to be in our band.
And how much power did that dude have when he said, I'll be in your band if you move to another city?
Which, I mean, if you want someone that bad, you combine that with what was emerging in the L.A. scene, which is glam rock, which Metallica always referred to as gay L.A. metal, right? Or gay L.A. music. Or Mustaine, gay L.A. music. That's young Dave.
Yeah, that was good.
But so you can combine seeing this amazing bass player where you're like, we have to have him, with we don't fit in Hollywood, in L.A. All this new music is coming out, and it's just like high voices and spandex and makeup. And they'd already played shows in San Francisco with Exodus and stuff like that, so they'd already kind of seen that metal scene happening up there. So
that's true. There was a scene happening.
Yeah. And I mean, they played numerous times in San Francisco in 82. So I would think they would have been up there and be like, wow, this
they
scene
played
is
at the
great.
Stone and shit. Yeah.
Right.
So and the Wardour.
So combine seeing Cliff Burton and wanting him in the band, being over the LA glam rock scene already before it even really exploded.
It's true.
And had experience in San Francisco in that thrash metal scene. They were probably like, fuck yeah, let's do it. What do we have to lose?
That's true. I mean, you know, Slayer was there, but it's hard because LA's the place to be, man. I mean, if you're trying to break into shit, if I really liked a guy and wanted him to be in my band and he said, well, you got to move to Chattanooga, I'd be like, well, nice story. I mean, I'm not moving to Chattanooga's no San Francisco, although I love Chattanooga.
It's kind of the San Francisco of East Tennessee. It's the only big city in East Tennessee.
Yeah.
I was just there last night. It's a wonderful city. I love it down there.
Blake Talica came to your show.
He did. He brought his daughter, and apparently I was her first show.
That's bitching. He posted it. He sent us a picture on Instagram. He put his daughter had a battle vest.
Oh, yeah.
She's a little cutie pie, man.
Blake had me sign her battle vest.
Oh, cool.
Because it was her first show.
That's cool, man.
Yeah, it was awesome. She is a sweetie. His little kid, Stormy. At one point, towards the end of my set last night, she was just like all over the room just dancing. It was awesome.
Stormy, that's a bitchin' name.
I know. Stormy Talica. That's his last name, right? Talica?
Yeah. Well, yeah. According to the Library of Congress. Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, Blake, thank you for coming to the show last night. It was awesome to see you. And I'm blanking on your buddy's name, but good to see him too.
Drunk guy.
He seemed a little that way, which is
fine. That's me.
Which is totally fine. I would have been that way if I didn't have to drive home last night.
Well, there you have it. There's 1981, 1982, of course.
Yeah. In the future, these are going to be...
They'll be more dense.
They'll be more dense and longer
more
and stuff.
Information.
I mean, it's literally, I'm holding one piece of paper in front of me with all these facts
but
on
you
it.
Know, I like, even though we don't know, not as much as known, these are probably the least known years of Metallica's career. I like talking about it. It you know, gives me a warm fuzzy because...
Of course.
To think of all the near misses and like, what if Johnny Zazula had never heard the No Life to Leather demo?
Yeah.
What if they'd never, you know, What if Ron had never quit? What if James had never decided to start playing guitar? What if they'd have kept that other guy playing guitar? So many crazy what ifs.
What if Mustaine didn't break that string?
What if I have a boner?
Why, you do. There's a lot of what ifs back then, but obviously we're beyond thankful and grateful that, you know, the things happened the way they did.
Well, and I can't wait to do 1983.
It's gonna be
great. I like Camping Out in Kill 'Em All World. It's not, you know, it's not one I listen to a lot, but when we have a reason to sort of hang around there, I like it. I like that
of
world.
Of course, yeah. It's great. It's fucking great.
Well, if you want me to... You want me to say it's great, Paul? Say it's great.
Well, if you want me to end the episode, then just say peace and adios.
We appreciate everyone who's listening every week. Every week we get more and more people saying they like the show, and we get really nice emails. If you do like the show and you haven't already, go leave the review on iTunes. It only takes a second. Those reviews help us become more visible and all that stuff. And we actually do this contest where we're gonna put your name in a drawing. We're gonna give you some free shit. We're gonna give you our all Metallica cover EP. Cover our World Black, and you're going to get the Lunar Satan track, We Ride the Skies. I'm cooking up the next Lunar Satan track currently.
Ooh, nice.
Set the Witch on Fire Again. And you will
again.
And you will only be able to get that via the Patreon or through the gifts that we give away through iTunes.
Right, yeah.
Anything else I'm leaving out?
No, I'm just, my throat is sore and ready to kind of end this thing.
Oh, I know. You need some throat coat.
I'm a singer or something.
What he needs is some honey. Mix it with some throat coat. But make sure you're in bed by 10 because he's this many.
I'm actually on voice rest right now. Can you not talk
anymore? You're just writing notes to me on sticky notes.
Yeah. Ethan said that. Ethan said totally again.
You're just writing totally on a sticky.
Yeah. What do you think about Ethan? Totally.
Totally. What else is there?
There's not much
else. Should
we
say goodbye to the people?
We should say goodbye. Thanks for listening. We appreciate all you guys, each and every one of you. And with that, we're going to say
peace.
Adios.
If you were our advisor, what would you say? Then I would say, delete that.